From New York, Mutual and its affiliated stations present Carl Caruso, substituting tonight for William Hillman. Mr. Hillman's news and analysis is regularly heard at this time from Washington. Here is Carl Caruso with the news.
Good evening. From Washington to Berlin, Allied officials are conscious of the repercussions arising from the abortive plan which would have sent Chief Justice Fred Vinson to Moscow as a special peace envoy. The official announcement of the proposal and its cancellation was made just last night, but already it's been picked up by Russian propagandists. It's the current sensation in domestic political circles, and for a while at least, it seemed to have disturbed the delicate balance in Paris among United Nations delegates. President Truman originally considered it, as he expressed it in his own terms, because of my continuing great desire to see peace firmly established in the world. He suggested it to Secretary of State George Marshall in a transatlantic telephone conversation last Tuesday. Marshall mentioned it to no one at the UN meeting. The first public word of the plan came out Friday evening. And then, after Marshall returned to this country early yesterday and reported to the president on UN proceedings, the entire plan was canceled. Mr. Truman says he decided against it in the light of Marshall's report, and again to use his statement, because of the possibilities to which any unilateral action, however desirable otherwise, could lead at present. They're making it clear, the President and Secretary Marshall, that they continue to see eye to eye regarding our approach to the Berlin blockade and its related problems. They want to squelch any reports to the contrary, feeling as they do that such reports can do a great deal of harm. Marshall will hurry back to Paris, leaving sometime tomorrow, carrying the president's assurance of complete support for three-power diplomacy in the Cold War with Russia. It's felt in these high official circles that no real harm has been done, that the president and his chief diplomat have made it obvious that they are solidly behind United Nations and three-power diplomacy. And when Marshall is once again in Paris, he'll tell his diplomatic associates that from now on, policy decisions will be made only after full consultation and agreement among the three Allied powers. But the Soviet Union already is twisting the story around to serve its interests. In Berlin, the Red Army newspaper accuses the State Department of openly sabotaging the president's attempts to reopen peace talks with Russia. Western authorities, however, do not appear to be too worried about the propaganda value of the incident. In the United States, though, many observers are calling the entire plan and its cancellation the biggest sensation to hit diplomatic circles in 2 years. As Democratic Representative Carter Manasco of Alabama put it, it's similar to the time when Mr. Truman let Henry Wallace try to cut the feet out from under Jimmy Burns. Manasco had in mind the 1946 furor when the chief executive approved in advance a speech by the then Secretary of Commerce, Wallace. Wallace's speech objected to our policy of getting tough with Russia. Burns, Secretary of State at the time, was at a meeting of the big four foreign ministers. He protested Wallace's statement, and his protest precipitated Wallace's dismissal from the cabinet. It's indefinite at present as to how much political use will be made of the abortive plan for a new mission to Moscow. Republican presidential candidate Thomas Dewey criticizes the plan and its disclosure, but his statement hastens to declare that such goings-on do not indicate any break in our unity regarding foreign policy. Dewey's references were indirect when only a few hours ago he made this statement to newsmen. The people of America wholeheartedly and vigorously support the labors of our bipartisan delegation at Paris, and specifically its insistence on a prompt lifting of the blockade of Berlin. The nations of the world, Dewey continued, can rest assured that the American people are, in fact, united in their foreign policy, and will firmly and unshakably uphold the United Nations and our friends of the free world in every step to build and preserve the peace. It's revealed that some of the Dewey advisors are urging him to take advantage of what they call a diplomatic blunder and to make political hay of it. But Dewey's feeling is that the world situation is too delicate to make such a campaign issue one in the best national interest. In adopting such a stand, Dewey is taking sides with certain of his advisors who have consistently tried to keep the touchier world problems from becoming campaign issues. The Democrats, too, are mum on the subject. When Democratic National Chairman J. Howard McGrath was questioned, he said, "I never discussed it with the president. I have no comment on the subject." It's reported that in Paris, American delegates to the United Nations are embarrassed over the disclosure of the plan to send Vinson to the Kremlin, and they are anxiously awaiting the return of Secretary Marshall. French delegates are said to be especially nervous, and generally, Western Europe is anxious over possible American moves until the elections are over next month. Today, Russian delegate Andrei Fashinsky forwarded to Moscow the latest proposal aimed at ending the Berlin crisis. It's the Small Nation Compromise, which in its briefest form provides for immediate lifting of the Berlin blockade. In return, America, France, and Britain would drop their complaint to the UN Security Council, and direct four-power negotiation would be resumed. The United States already has made it clear that it will not fall in with any plan with strings attached, any plan which would provide only temporary removal of the blockade. Western observers in general doubt that the Soviet will consent to the compromise proposal. The Republican expert on foreign affairs, Senator Arthur Vandenberg, has thus far remained silent regarding the Mission to Moscow plan. But here in New York tonight, Vandenberg has said that we are being slandered by the Soviet Union when the Soviets say that the United States has imperialism as the goal of its foreign policy. Vandenberg was speaking at a meeting of the Freedom House, from which he received the organization's annual award for service to a free world. Said the senator from Michigan, "Your citation speaks of service to a free world. America has rendered, and continues to render, that service in prodigal degree. Its like is not to be found in history. We're doing it in a spirit which puts to shame the miserable slanders that selfish imperialism is our aim. Our chief foreign critics, upon that score, would do well to consult a mirror. That," Vandenberg went on, "that is where they will see imperialism on the march. The humanities, not conquest, are our goal. If stabilities and honorable peace shall fail, it will not be for want of our devoted trying." He continued, outlining our foreign policy. He declared that our aim is not to contain Russia, not to Americanize Europe. "Our objective is," asserted Vandenberg, "to return Europe to the Europeans and take them off the dole. When this is done, our objective is to retire from a Europe which has reestablished itself." By way of explanation, Freedom House is an organization set up in memory of the late Wendell Willkie and dedicated to Willkie's idea of one free world. Congratulatory telegrams poured into Vandenberg from President Truman, Governor Dewey, General Dwight Eisenhower, and other world figures. The messages from the two major party presidential candidates came just as they were about to depart on campaign tours of the Middle West. In fact, the Midwestern states will be literally saturated with presidential candidates this week. In addition to the Truman and Dewey parties, socialist Norman Thomas and progressive Henry Wallace will be stumping through the area. President Truman is scheduled to make 5 major addresses and innumerable train-side appearances. His first speech will be delivered in Akron, Ohio, tomorrow night. He's already en route, having left Washington at 6 o'clock Sunday evening, Eastern Time. Dewey's campaign special is to leave Albany in about an hour. He speaks tomorrow night in Pittsburgh, the first of 3 major addresses, and he, too, will be seen at dozens of platform appearances. Incidentally, it's said that President Truman's aggressive campaigning is paying off in party enthusiasm and in cash. Since his series of bitter attacks against the GOP, campaign contributions reportedly have increased to a great extent, and he promises more of the same, more attacks against the Republicans on the trip just started. Both itineraries are ambitious. The president to appear in 5 Midwestern states and in West Virginia, Dewey in 8 states, all in the Midlands. The Democratic standard bearer is expected to hammer away at the topics which have been his favorites in previous speeches. The GOP-dominated 80th Congress, the GOP failure or refusal to act upon presidential legislative recommendations. In the past, Governor Dewey has generally stressed national unity in the face of the threatening foreign situation. He'll depart from that to some extent this week. His first speech, the one in Pittsburgh, will deal with the Taft-Hartley law. And throughout the 7-day period, he's expected to go into detail on his own views regarding labor. The announcement has come from Washington that the world at large is being kept abreast of political developments in the United States. No attempt whatsoever has been made to mask the bitter pre-election controversy. Through the Voice of America, a steady stream of political analysis has been beamed to Western Europe and to communist-controlled Eastern European areas. Recently, the State Department shortwave broadcasts have admitted that President Truman seemed to be lagging behind Dewey in the campaign race. The broadcasts cited public opinion polls, which indicated that public sentiment at the time would have given the nod to the Republicans. The reasons behind that were outlined: the Dixiecrat revolt from the Democratic ranks and Henry Wallace's Progressive Party. Every attempt has been made, according to the State Department, to give equal attention to speeches made by President Truman and Governor Dewey. The lesser candidates haven't been getting as much attention, but officials say they've gotten about the same relative coverage as they normally receive in newspapers. It's pointed out that nations behind Russia's Iron Curtain must be startled when the Voice of America tells, for instance, of Wallace's attacks on our foreign policy. Such factual reporting, experts say, should be boosting the prestige of the shortwave broadcasts. If the Messrs. Truman and Dewey had sallied into the Midwest a few days earlier, they'd have found themselves competing with an American institution seemingly more attractive than any political race, the World Series. As it is, the series setting has been shifted to Boston. The sixth game will be played tomorrow afternoon, Monday afternoon, that is. All predictions were upset today when the Boston Braves brought out their long-range guns and defeated the Cleveland Indians 11-5. That brings the game total to 3 victories for Cleveland and 2 for Boston. Line summaries: for Boston, 11 runs, 12 hits, no errors. For Cleveland, 5 runs, 6 hits, and 2 errors. Bob Feller started for Cleveland and was charged with the loss, his second in World Series play. He was one of 5 badly mauled Indian pitchers, the others being Ed Kleiman, Russ Christopher, Satchel Paige, and Bob Moncrief. Nelson Potter started on the mound for the Braves, but gave way in the fourth inning to Warren Spahn. Spahn was the losing pitcher in the second series game, but today he was brilliant, holding Cleveland to but 1 hit while he was in the game and being credited with the victory. Boston's attack was started when Bob Elliott hit the first inning home run with 2 teammates on base. Elliott further redeemed himself for a poor series record to date with another home run later on, and Bill Salkeld, the Braves catcher, contributed a 4-base blow to the offensive. Cleveland had 2 home runs, hit by Dale Mitchell and Jim Hegan, but as it turned out, those were wasted. It was a seesaw battle until the 7th, when Boston leveled off on Feller and his relief man, Kleiman, for 6 runs. That ended the day's scoring, but it was more than enough for Warren Spahn, who by that time had the situation well in hand. The crowd was the largest ever to watch a baseball game, 86,288 fans. When the teams take to the field in Boston tomorrow, Cleveland once again will be heavily favored to win the game, and with tomorrow's game, the Indians would win the series. Bob Lemon has been named as starting pitcher, his second start of the series. He was the winning pitcher in the second game last Thursday. Bill Voisel will start for Boston. The weather will be cloudy and cool, showers possible for Boston, but they aren't expected to interfere with the game. And remember, many of these stations are carrying Mutual's exclusive broadcast of the World Series. The play-by-play account, handled by Mel Allen and Jim Britt, will start at 12:45 Eastern Standard Time. Another sports item is reported from Des Moines, Illinois, a sports item with a tragic note. The national automobile racing champion Ted Horn was killed today when his car lost a wheel at the Des Moines Fairground racetrack. The 38-year-old race driver had won the national AAA championship in the last 2 years. On 10 different occasions, he drove in the Indianapolis Speedway race on Memorial Day, but was never the winner. This year, Horn finished 4th. A report on national defense comes tonight from the Office of Defense Secretary James Forrestal in Washington. Forrestal plans a series of secret conferences with leaders of all phases of national life. The 10-day round of meetings will start on November 10th. And that's the news from New York.
You've been listening to up-to-the-minute news reported from New York by Carl Caruso. Mr. Caruso has been sitting in tonight for Mutual's Washington correspondent, William Hillman, regularly heard at this time each Sunday night. Mr. Hillman will be back at this time next week with his commentary on the Washington and international scene. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.